Not too many people enjoy pain. Not too many people actively seek out pain. In fact, the typical case, the typical response by humans to pain is that of avoidance. Whenever we are confronted with something that causes us discomfort, that causes us pain, that is something unpleasant, we want to do whatever we can to avoid that situation. I do understand that there are some people who seem like they seek out those types of things and maybe seek out conflict between themselves and someone else. But for the most part, we don't like pain. We want comfort. We don't want any struggles. We want it easy. We want to be able to kick back in that lazy chair or in the alongside the beach, in the beach chair, and just sip our drink and have it, our toes in the sand and just relax and have no worries and no problems. We don't want pain or suffering. And when pain and suffering comes, we may be tempted to ask questions such as, why me? Why is this happening to me? And this is especially true if we're innocent if we're innocent in the matter, and the pain or suffering we're experiencing is not the result of our own stupidity, but rather because we are simply in the wrong place at the wrong time, or from a spiritual standpoint, because we're a Christian. Pain or suffering as a result of our own mistakes or our own wrongdoing is expected. We understand that. Doesn't mean we like it, but we get it. And we can deal with that. But pain and suffering can have two possible effects on people. There are two ways that we can approach pain and suffering. And this is true of both the physical, the non-spiritual matters, but also our faith as well. It can cause people to stop what you're doing. It can cause us to give up. It can cause us to shake our fist at God and say, why are you letting this happen to me? And why aren't you doing something about this? And it has caused many people to abandon their faith and even abandon a belief in God. Or pain and suffering can inspire somebody to keep pushing through the pain, to courageously endure, and to come out stronger on the other side of the crucible. And just as a by way of illustration, whenever you exercise, and if you exercise to the point to where you strain your muscles, you understand you're going to have sore muscles. You understand that fighting through that exercise is not fun. Now, if you give up, are you ever going to become any better? Are you ever going to become any stronger? Are you ever going to become any healthier? And of course, we understand the answer to that is no. But why do people, when they're exercising, when they're lifting weights, why do they continue to push through the pain? Because they see what happens on the other side. They understand the effect that it will have on them. And while we don't enjoy the pain and suffering, and while we may not understand why it's happening, if we take that approach of inspired to keep pushing through, then we stand firm in the faith that God knows and that God is working through it all. Paul, of course, fell into the latter category. He relied upon God's grace to help him through his pain and suffering. He didn't necessarily know why it was all happening. He didn't appreciate it. He didn't want it. But he relied upon God's grace to get him through. And of course, the lesson is there for us that we should do the same. The manner in which he approached his sufferings serves as an example to us and teaches us some important truths about how to endure through our pain and suffering. In Acts chapter 9 and in verse 16, this is on the occasion of Paul's conversion. Of course, at the time he was known as Saul. And he's in Damascus and waiting on Ananias to come to him. And God is having a conversation with Ananias about Saul and saying, you need to go and you need to speak to him. You need to teach him what he needs to do. You need to baptize him. And listen to what God tells to Ananias, Acts 9, verse 15. The Lord said to him, go, for he is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel. But notice verse 16, for I will show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. That was revealed to Paul right from the get-go. You're going to suffer a great many things for me. And then when you flip over to 2 Corinthians 11, you see Paul start to enumerate many of the things that he had endured up to that point. 2 Corinthians 11 and in verse 22, he is defending himself, defending his apostleship, defending why all these things are happening to him and why he appears so weak to so many people. People looked at Paul, looked at everything he was going through and said, well, you must not be a true apostle. You must not really get how this is supposed to go. You're supposed to have a life of ease and comfort if you're one of God's chosen people. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors, more abundant. In stripes, above measure. In prisons, more frequently. In deaths, often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often. In perils of waters. In perils of robbers. In perils of my own countrymen. In perils of the Gentiles. In perils in the city. In perils in the wilderness. In perils in the sea. In perils among false brethren. In weariness and toil. In sleeplessness often. In hunger and thirst. In fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. And that's just what had happened to him up to that point. We know as a matter of fact that he had another shipwreck because his journey to Rome had not happened yet when he recorded this. And he was shipwrecked on the way to Rome. And eventually he was put in prison. But before he wrote this, he hadn't spent the 2 years in Caesarea. He hadn't even spent the 2 years in Rome. So there's another 4 years in prison awaiting for him when he writes this. And we know he ultimately lost his life for the cause of Christ as well. He was beheaded upon his second imprisonment. He mentions in 2 Corinthians 12... that these sufferings that he was enduring were actually a response to all the abundant revelations he had been given. I don't know if these sufferings that Paul endured are more than any other Christian has ever endured, but as far as who's recorded in the New Testament, nobody comes close. Certainly, we don't come close to experiencing one tiny bit of what he suffered. But in 2 Corinthians 12, he gives the reasons for all this, and he says in verse 1, I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. And he speaks of himself in the third person here in verse 2 when he says that 14 years ago, I was called up to the third heaven. He was called up into the presence of God. And he doesn't know if it was a vision. He doesn't know if it was in his body or an out-of-body experience. He doesn't really understand everything that happened, but verse 4, he was caught up into paradise and he heard inexpressible words which it is not lawful for a man to utter. He saw some amazing things. He was told some amazing things. He was given these wonderful revelations. But then, verse 7, lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. This is an apt metaphor, this thorn in the flesh, of something sticking in him, something causing him continual pain, So much so that he begs of Jesus three times to remove that thorn from him. And of course, the answer that Jesus gives is no. We'll take a look at that in just a moment. But understand, this is not some little small nuisance. This is not some small thorn. The word that's used here is a word to describe a rather large thorn, and this is something that was sticking in him, causing him continual pain, and every time he moved, every movement he made, everything he did caused that thorn to just twist in him more, stick in him more, and it could not be extracted. In fact, the same word that's used to describe this thorn, which probably the picture is that same type of thorn, large thorn, that would have been used to fashion the crown of thorns that Jesus would have been given. But that same word is also used to describe a stake upon which people were impaled. We're not talking about a little bitty sticker here. When we were living in San Antonio, one of the things I hated the most about living out there was the yards, the grass, was covered in what we called stickers. There was no walking around barefoot. In fact, you walk around even just in your jeans or in your shoes, and or when I was weed eating, and the stickers would be covering my legs and my jeans and my shoes, and inevitably they would be tracked into the house and onto the carpet. And of course, you're going to find those stickers with your bare feet. And you're going to step on those, and it hurts, and they get stuck in there, and sometimes they cause a little bit of blood to come out, but that's not the picture. Oh, that was painful. It was a nuisance. I was glad to get out of that environment. But this is a large thorn, a stake that is stuck in him. This is a major problem. Major source of suffering. We're not going to speculate about what the thorn in the flesh was. That doesn't matter. Regardless of what it was, the lessons to be learned this morning lie in what Jesus says to Paul. When Paul asks him, please remove this thorn, he says, my grace is sufficient for you. What a powerful statement. And what lessons to be learned from the master's response, and what lessons to be learned also from Paul's response to Jesus' response. That's what we're going to focus on this morning. First of all, lesson number one is that Satan will do everything in his power to destroy you. If you are a Christian, you are guaranteed to receive pain and suffering from Satan. And he will do everything in his power to derail you, to get you off of that path that leads to righteousness. He will do everything in his power to cause you to not have faith in Jesus, not have faith in God, and not follow him, but to question and doubt and to want to give up. Look at everything that he threw at Paul. Compare that with what we have encountered. We get concerned about the possibility of being made fun of. We get concerned about somebody saying something about us behind our backs, maybe to our face. We get concerned about maybe losing a friend and the potential conflict between us and someone else who does not agree with us regarding the Bible and the Word of God. We may even be threatened with loss of employment if we don't comply with certain rules, especially now with all the homosexual and transgender issues that are the buzz of the day. But when's the last time you or I were whipped 39 times on our back because we were preaching the gospel? When's the last time that you were beaten with rods on account of making a stand for Jesus Christ? When's the last time you or I suffered a shipwreck on our journey to teach others? And when's the last time you and I were staying afloat in the water for a night and a day, out there in the deep, wondering if we would ever be rescued? Or if we were going to drown? When's the last time you or I were stoned and left for dead because of the words that we were preaching? When's the last time you or I were imprisoned for speaking about Jesus or for speaking up against sin and error? And when's the last time you or I were ever cold or naked because we didn't have clothing or shelter, or when's the last time you or I were hungry because we had no food? All because of our efforts in spreading the gospel message. When's the last time we really suffered on account of our faith in Christ Jesus? Now, that doesn't mean that Satan is not working hard to destroy us. He absolutely is hard at work. But for whatever reason, most likely due to the grace of God, he has not been using physical suffering in the fight against us, at least not for those of us here in the U.S. But I believe I can say with pretty good confidence, that's going to change. That's coming. Maybe not in our lifetime, but maybe in our children's lifetime. We're seeing the precursors to that already with the rulings against business owners who refuse to violate their faith, and with the whole bathroom thing in the stores and in the schools and the showers and so forth. I know that Karen has mentioned on several occasions that she is concerned that at some point she may suffer that as a photographer for not wanting to take pictures at a homosexual wedding. Is she going to suffer the same fate as business owners who refuse to bake cakes for homosexual weddings? It's coming. It's already on the doorstep. But in the meantime, Satan will certainly use other methods. And these are methods that we're very familiar with. He's always going to be sending us temptations, knowing whatever our spiritual desires, our sinful desires are. He floods the media with sexual images and with perverse and unholy language and content. He floods the media with all sorts of manner of images and things that will cause us to not view sin as seriously as God does. He uses our pride to keep us from being humble and serving others. He tempts us with greed. He tempts us with materialism. He says, take a look at all the things this world has to offer. You really need to be pursuing this. He uses our moods and our emotions to make us vulnerable, to break us down and cause us to be not the kind of people we need to be in our reaction to others. He uses discouragement. He uses depression. He uses family members. He even uses other Christians and pits them against other Christians. Unfortunately, just the last two or three days on Facebook, I was in a discussion with another gospel preacher. And the discussion turned south very quickly. I've never had a gospel preacher lie about me before on Facebook for all to see and to accuse me of certain untrue things. But this gospel preacher did exactly that for the whole world to see. Refused to accept his mistakes and his lie. Another gospel preacher. He tempts us with pleasure and comfort. He keeps us from reaching beyond our own homes and our own little world and reaching into the lives of others because, oh, that would be uncomfortable. That would be a sacrifice of our time and our money and the things that we want to save for ourselves. And he says, no, you don't have to do that. Just sit back and take it easy. We cannot underestimate Satan and his influence in our lives. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and in verse 11, he says this, speaking of the issues that the Corinthians were facing and some temptations that would have been there with a problem with a certain individual. And he says this at the close of the paragraph, we need to beware of Satan taking advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. Let's make sure that that's the case, that we are not ignorant of his devices, that we understand how he is attacking us, and he is going to do everything in his power to destroy us. We need to be aware of that. We need to be on the lookout for that. We need to be vigilant, always looking, always expecting Satan to attack. He wants to shipwreck our faith. But countering this very fact that Satan will do everything in his power to destroy you, just like he was doing everything in his power to destroy Paul, is the fact that God will do everything in his power to save you. Yes, Satan is going to be working on one end to destroy you, but God is going to be working and doing everything in his power to save you. This is the grace of God. That is part of his grace, that he wants to save you. He wants to do everything he can, and he has done. And one of the ways he does that is that he limits Satan's power. Yes, Satan will do everything in his power, but he's limited in that power. You see, 2 Corinthians 12 is really the New Testament version of the story of Job. And we understand from the story of Job that God and Satan had this conversation about God's servant Job, and Satan says to God, you know the only reason Job serves you? The only reason Job is faithful to you is because look at everything you've done for him. He's rich. He's got all this peace and comfort. You take that away, and he'll curse you. God says, go for it. Try it. See what happens. We know the story. We know that Job at the end of chapter 1 says, naked I came into this world, naked shall I return. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And he did not curse God. He understood that he was going to continue to have faith in God regardless of what happened to him. And he came to him again. And he said, okay, well, yeah, you took away the family, you took away the possessions, but let me attack his body. Let me cause him physical pain. He'll curse you. God says, try it. Just, you're not allowed to kill him. And he suffered greatly. But yet he still remained faithful to God. And Paul is the New Testament version of that, where you have the Satan testing Paul. You have Satan making Paul suffer. This was a messenger of Satan. It was buffeting him. That is, it was beating on him. It was battering him. It was bruising him. It was this thorn, the stake that was sticking in him. And who's behind it all? Who's limiting what Satan can do? Is God. That is God's grace. Now, while Satan is the source of suffering, while Satan was the one inflicting the pain, the implication of both Job and in 2 Corinthians 12 is that God is behind it all. The implication is that he may have even authorized the thorn. Well, how on earth is that fair? How is that right for God to do that? Why would God want that to happen to Paul or to us? Take a look again in our text in 2 Corinthians 12 and notice what Paul says in verse 7. He says, lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. See, the thorn was a counterbalance. These sufferings he was going through were meant to counteract the potential pride and elevation of Paul in his own mind and the way that he would appear to others. It was a way of keeping him humble. And God knew that's exactly what Paul needed. It was given to him. That implies that God was the one giving it to him. And it was done as a result of the revelations and done to counteract that. He wants to save you. He wanted to save Paul. But God's not going to save you from having to suffer. God is not going to take away your suffering. And that is a lesson that we see both Old and New Testament, all through the Bible, God's people suffers. God's people suffer. Why? Why would God allow that? That's one of the all-time questions. Why does God allow suffering? Especially when it's on account of being a Christian. He's not going to keep you from going through trials and temptations because he knows that's exactly what you need. There was an article on a blog that I read just yesterday or the day before. It was by some mother, some parenting mom. I think the name of the website is Scary Mama. And in this blog, on this particular post, the title was, Why I Subscribe to the Let Them Bleed Parenting Style. Let Them Bleed. And she opens the blog post with this story of when she was going out of the store, and she sees this little three-year-old girl and her mother, and the three-year-old girl tries to jump over the curb, ends up tripping, falling down on her knees, skint her knees, and she immediately looks up at her mama, awaiting for her mama's reaction. The mama did not subscribe to the let them bleed style of parenting. Instead, she was, oh, are you okay? Oh, let me pick you up and let me wipe away all the tears and, oh, no, it'll be all right. And of course, as soon as she did that, the three-year-old girl started crying and didn't take too well to the pain and suffering that was going on. The author's response to that was to say, you know what? It's not that we need to be uncaring about our children's plight and the things that happen to them. But there are times we need to let them bleed. There are times we need to let our children experience pain and see the what happens and see what the real world is and see how you can come out better on the other side if we're always overly protective of our children and never let them experience any kind of bad thing. They're going to be completely unfit for the world. God knows what we need. And He knows that sometimes we need to bleed. That sometimes we need to experience the pain and suffering that His own Son suffered on the cross and in this world so that we can do what? Take a look at the ultimate purpose of it. Take a look at what Jesus says in verse 9. My grace is sufficient for you, for My strength is made perfect in weakness. In other words, it's My power that is exalted at that point. My power, My strength has the effect that it needs to have. You're weak, but My strength shines through, Jesus says. You're suffering, but you can handle it because I'm going to help you bear the load. And it's not you that is strong, Paul. It's I'm that am strong. It's not you that receives the glory. It's I that receives the glory. And you cannot handle this on your own, but you can handle it with Me. God will do everything in His power to save you. And that includes allowing you to suffer. That includes allowing you to bleed. The passage that Peyton read for us this morning from James chapter 1. James understood this point. And he encourages the brethren there to count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, its complete work. Let it do what it's designed to do, in other words, that you may be perfect, that you may be complete, lacking nothing. Why does God allow us to suffer? And let me make sure that we understand what I'm talking about here. I don't know that I've been clear enough. I'm talking about suffering on account of being a Christian, which is what the entire epistle of 1 Peter is about. I'm not talking about the common suffering that is common to mankind of all peoples, no matter who they are. I'm not talking about just, oh, I've got pain in my back or I've got health issues. No, that just comes as a part of life. I'm talking about the suffering that, like Paul was enduring, and that we should be enduring if we are sticking up for Christ. God is going to allow us, and in fact, He desires us to go through this suffering because He knows it makes us better. He knows what our faith will be like on the other end. He knows that we will learn to rely upon Him. And so, yes, limiting what Satan can do to us is a form of God's grace, but the actual giving of the thorn is also a form of God's grace. And it's a way in which He is an effort to save us. God is abundant in His grace, and Usually when we speak of grace, we talk about the salvation, forgiveness of sins, but that's not the type of grace we're talking about here. It's not the type of grace that Jesus was saying when he says, my grace is sufficient for you. He's talking about being able to bear him up and to sustain him. It's not just the grace that saves us at the last day. It's the grace, that sustains us every day. It's the blessing of his power and strength, allowing us to survive the thorns we've been given. Which brings us to the last point. And that is, if we understand that Satan's going to do everything he can to destroy us, and that God's going to do everything he can to save us, then as Paul learned here, we need to be praying not for comfort, but for strength. Paul said, Jesus, will you please remove this thorn from my flesh? And after being taught the lesson by Jesus, he then said, you know what, never mind. Instead of requesting you to remove it, I'm going to glory in my infirmities. Why? So that the power of Christ can dwell on me, can rest on me. And brethren, I believe that is a prayer that we do not pray enough. We pray so often, oh, let it be easy for us and take this away from us. No! The better prayer, as Paul learned, is not, Jesus, please remove suffering from my life. Please make it easy on me. But rather, please give me strength. Please give me your power. Please give me your grace to sustain me, to help me make it through this. Paul quickly changed his tune. He started to glory in the thorn. It's because it gave him access to that power of Christ. And in reality, he became stronger than he would have been without the thorn. In fact, the way he concludes this there in 2 Corinthians 12, in the last verse of that paragraph, he says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Instead of relying on his own power, by relying upon the power of Jesus, then he became strong. Then he was able to do everything that Jesus was calling him to do. If he had been left alone with a life of comfort and ease, he would not have accomplished as much as he did. And so he gloried in that thorn. I want to suggest something to you that I believe is true of us, especially here in the U.S., that we have gotten so used to comfort that any time anybody experiences some type of backlash from the world because we make a stand for Christianity, we get all upset about it, we wring our hands, and we wonder, well, wait a minute, what happened to our Judeo-Christian principles here in the U.S.? Brethren, this nation was never a Christian nation. We're not a theocracy. And this is simply a small amount of time in the history of mankind that God's people have not been persecuted to the extent that they have been in other periods of time. This is something we should expect. And I would dare say that if we're not suffering for the cause of Christ, it may be related to the fact that we're not doing the work that we need to do. Because if we are making the stand, if we are preaching the word, and I don't mean within the confines of these four walls, to the preaching to the choir, so to speak. Oh, it's easy to say these things amongst ourselves, but what about to the world? If we're not taking that gospel message, it is inevitable that if you take the gospel message to enough people, you're going to receive backlash. It's going to cause issues. And there's going to come a day where we may face the physical or financial sufferings like Paul was suffering. But we need to see what are we more concerned about? Are we more concerned about our comfort? Or are we more concerned about the power of Christ resting in us and the grace that he gives us? There are two ways to lighten a load. When you see your brother struggling, when you see him with something that he cannot bear on his own, there are two things you can do, and you can do this with your children as well. This goes back to the let them bleed parenting style. You can either remove the burden from that person and take it upon yourself completely, or you can come up beside them and you can get up underneath that burden with them and you can help them bear it. You know, God always chooses that latter method. God always chooses the latter method in the fact that He will supply the strength that we need. He doesn't just completely remove the burden from us. He doesn't remove the pain and suffering. He says, "My grace is sufficient for you. I can help you. I can give you the power to bear it." So pray not for the burden to be removed, but pray for strength, God's power. I know it's kind of a strange thing to say and to imagine praying for, but you know what? Maybe we need to pray for a few more thorns. Maybe we need to pray for some motivation. Instead of our comfort, instead of our peace, we need to pray for opportunities to proclaim the message and to share the gospel and to stand up in the face of sin and error. And be prepared for what may come and say, you know what? Come what may, God is with me. And I can rely on His power and I can rely on His grace. That's sufficient for me. That's all I need. Let's stop the worrying about where this country is heading. Let's stop the hand-wringing. But let's stand up and take a stand. And let's share the message. And let's share the hope. Because, folks, people are not lost just because they claim to be a woman when they're a man. People are not lost because they use bad language. People are not lost because they go to bars or to other places that evil and wickedness goes on. People are not lost because they wear immodest clothing. People are not lost because they're engaging in deviant sexual behavior. People are lost because they don't have Jesus Christ. People are lost because they have not submitted to Jesus as Lord. People are lost because they have not obeyed Him and put on Christ in baptism to have those sins washed away and then followed Him with everything, every fiber of their being. People are lost because they don't have Jesus. That's the message we need to take to people. We need to take the message of hope to people. And yes, that will bring suffering. It will bring suffering to us. It will bring suffering to them. But those thorns in the flesh are designed to make us stronger, designed to make us rely on Jesus and His grace. I encourage you to find your hope and your power and your strength and your glory, not in peace and comfort, not in your own abilities, but rather in the grace that Jesus provides. We certainly want to provide hope for you here at this congregation as well, through the message of Jesus Christ and through the forgiveness of sins that comes through putting Him on in baptism, being baptized into His death and being raised up as a new creature in newness of life. If you have not been baptized, you don't have that hope. You don't have the forgiveness of sins. That comes through baptism. There is no reason to delay because we don't know when our life will end. We don't know when Jesus will be coming back. And the call of the gospel is don't live for yourself, but live for Jesus. Live for the bigger picture. Live for eternity, not for the here and now. And so we offer you this time to as we sing in just a moment, to come forward and make your confession, turn to Christ and be baptized. If you are a Christian, I encourage you to continue in your resolve, regardless of what comes. Stay strong. As we talked about last Sunday night, that message to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Lord God is with you. Can we help you in some way in your walk with the Lord? If we can, won't you come forward as together we stand and as we sing.